people, a voice of a nation with something to say, reaching out to thousands of people all over the world every day. So take time and let us know what's on your mind. You'll find a voice on VOV. Oh yeah. Turn on your radio from coast to shining coast, the voice of Barbados.
Well, the time is now a minute and 55 seconds after 6 o'clock, and the good doctor is in. We are going to share some information with you, as per usual, as we do every Sunday. But for the last two Sundays, last Sunday, this Sunday, we've got a third partner, A.A. Lakis. This segment is brought to you with the kind compliments of Hospital Pack Adult Disposable Briefs, another trusted brand of AAA, that should be A.A. Lakis. Call A.A. Lakis at 271-0180 and visit their store at Lanterns Mall. So we'll take in a word from our sponsors, and then you'll come back and hear the voice of the good doctor.
I remember when I was a child and Mommy used to take me for walks. She would pick me flowers and do anything to make me happy. Well, these days, I take her for walks in her wheelchair, and it's my turn now to do everything to make her happy. That's why I only trust Hospital Pack Briefs to keep her dry, protected, and comfortable. Because it's my turn now to take care of her the way she took care of me, with only the best.
Hospital Pack Adult Disposable Briefs, another trusted brand from A.A. Lakis.
Very good evening to the doctor. She has her guest with her. She'll introduce him in just a second. But good evening, Doc.
Good evening, Greston. How are you?
I am not too bad. Before you get started with your program, I've got a bone to pick with you. Oh. You've got people now on my case where you were concerned. It used to be the other way around. First of all, let me just say good evening to a chap by the name of Grenville Ford. I think his last name is Fred Ford or Ford, but he's my neighbor. He's a retired gentleman, and he stopped me on Friday to allow me to know that he loves to hear the program. So I'm happy that the guys are listening.
Oh, okay.
He thinks that we have a great rapport. That's what he said. That's what he said. So good evening to you, Grenville. That's one. And two, this is the other part that has me up in arms. Two young ladies, they're not necessarily from my area, but down my side. They know me. They stopped me, as usual, congratulate me. Great music, Greg. Love to hear you. All that. You know, make me feel sweet, that sort of thing. And then they started with the good doctor. I said, yep, she's great, but I'm thinking of having her replaced. Who tell me, sis, so? I'm just kidding, you know. She said, one lady said, yes, when you have her replaced, you stay where you does be at night when you don't come home. I was like, wait a minute. Wait. Two things happened here. One, the loyalty. I thought it was all about me with you just now. And secondly, you watch my movements now. Any hope to those two young ladies? Have a great evening. Good evening to all of you. Doctor, it's all yours.
Good evening to everybody who is listening. No name, no blame, no jail, no lockup. Thank you for all those of you who listen to the show. I was just having a discussion with my guest. We'll hear from him in just a few seconds about the fact that there are several people who are listening, and they're saying that they're listening to the program. So good evening to all of you who tune in every Sunday here on VOB at 6 to 7 for the Better Health Radio Show, where we help you to live your best life. If you want to give us a call here in the studio, 434-1790, and the WhatsApp would be 266-4862. And this evening, we are going to be talking about nutrition. I know that there might be some persons who are wondering why we are not discussing per se COVID-19 and the coronavirus and so on and so forth. But I do believe that there is a significant amount of information on all of the media platforms, and there's plenty of information out there. I think my advice would be to make sure that you stay safe, do the basics such as hand washing and staying away from persons who are visibly ill. And if you yourself are ill, you seek medical attention and try not to infect other persons. And this is not a time for us to panic. I think that's one of the messages that those persons who are monitoring the situation are trying to get over, that we should not panic. It's a matter of being prepared and acting on those things upon which we can act. So make sure that you wash your hands. If that's one lesson that we need to take away, wash your hands and keep your hands from your face and your mouth and so on and so forth. But this evening we're discussing nutrition. And nutrition obviously would be important in managing any viral illness such as COVID-19 anyhow. So
indeed,
we are in with Mr. Brian Payne. Good evening, Brian.
Hey, good evening, Dr. Boyce.
How are you doing this evening?
I am doing well. No complaints at all. It's a pleasure being here again. second time, I think.
Yes, this is your second time. And we're going to have Brian on again later on this year. And we'll explain to you why he's going to be on a little later on this year. First of all, Brian, remind persons of who is Brian Payne? What do you do?
Brian, I am a community nutrition officer of the National Nutrition Center. We are a group of nutritionists, dietitians who work within the polyclinic system, and we counsel patients based on nutrition, physical activity, and the primary person we would see would be older to middle-aged persons who may have an existing non-communicable condition or persons seeking guidance as it relates to nutrition.
So you said community nutrition officer. Is it that you go out into the community to deal with patients, or your patients are those who only come, who meet you in the system?
A bit of both. I would do home, or we do home visits to older persons primarily, but we generally see persons at the polyclinic facility. We also do community outreach where we work with whether it be churches, schools, businesses, and other organizations. So we also do quite a bit of work in the community in terms of nutrition education primarily.
This might seem like a silly question, but do you think that nutrition is important?
It's very important. Often it should be the first thing people consider, especially when they're thinking about trying to improve their health.
So nutrition is actually very important in managing many, if not all, of the chronic diseases.
Very true.
And I think the only thing that is spoken about a little less than COVID-19 now is still the NCDs. We still have not seemed to make a significant enough dent. We probably have made some progress because persons do report that they see people who tend to be paying more attention. Now you see more people walking on the streets. When you walk around in the supermarkets, you see persons actually looking at labels. And we're going to talk a little bit about labels as we go on. So the message about the need for managing the chronic diseases seems to be getting across. But unfortunately, not everybody seems to be getting this message about the importance of nutrition and exercise.
I think you're spot on, and there's so much information out there. I think it's available locally, international information. But the challenge is that behavior change tends to be the big issue. Whether persons are accustomed, or whether persons grew up in household where fruits and vegetables are generally consumed, whether drinking water is something that is practiced in the family. So it's even simple things like those, it's often a bit of a challenge to get people to adopt these behaviors.
Yeah, well, you couldn't see, but Brian was actually laughing there just now when he spoke about it being challenging to get persons to adopt these healthy behaviors. And it really is a lesson in patience, trying to get over to the persons with whom you're dealing that your nutrition, your exercise, your adherence with your doctors and nurses and other healthcare professionals' advice is important, and you should really, really try to become involved in your own healthcare. But sometimes the message falls on deaf ears.
From my perspective, I think people often try to outsource their medical treatment or their long-term care. Outsource in the sense that they would depend on depend on the nurse, the doctor, the dietitian, the nutritionist, for them to provide all the answers that they would want. So persons, especially, well, I think things are changing a bit, but persons are still too willing to come into a facility and expect to be spoon-fed as it relates to medical treatment or nutrition intervention.
I think one of the problems would have been the culture of medicine. Previously, medicine was thought to be paternalistic, where the doctor was almost the almighty. What the doctor said went, and the doctor had the last word on everything. But throughout the years, it has shifted now to the patient-centered model, where the patient is at the core of everything that is done, and all the other different healthcare disciplines interact with the patient with the view that the patient who's in the center of this model gets the best of all those worlds. But like you say, there are still many people, and it still seems to be the older persons who prefer to get the information spoon-fed to them. you suggest a person, or what do you think would be the best? I don't know, Doc. What you say, I think, is the best thing to do. And you find that those persons who are more engaged in their own healthcare are the ones who tend to do better. So let's talk about the word diet. For you as a community nutrition officer, what does diet mean?
Diet, all the term, I think people, well, for me personally, a diet is basically the food that we consume.
Right, so for you, diet is a noun, but for the average person, diet is a verb, something that you do to lose weight.
To lose weight, yeah. And again, weight loss is still the key thing that people inquire about, you know. So when people hear diet, they think of what we would refer to as fad diets or yo-yo diets. Again, yo-yo diet because, you know, you may go on a diet and you may lose a bit of weight, or you may have some improvement in your health, outcome. But as soon as you come off this often very restrictive diet, primarily calorie restrictive diet, the weight tends to find you again very quickly.
Sorry. No, just like the way you put it, the weight tends to find you. Again, it's not the patient's fault, it's the weight's fault. The weight finds you. Okay, that was very diplomatic.
Indeed.
And in addition to the weight finding you, it brings along a couple of friends because you tend to put on more weight after you have lost weight in the first place and you're regaining it. How does one go about making your diet balanced? Because you said diet is the food that we consume. What's the purpose of eating anyway?
I think we as a people, I think we still think we eat food because it tastes good, and in many cases we eat food because it's there. But however, we should eat food, or we should eat for good nutrition. Doesn't it? I don't necessarily mean that you would have oats and bran flakes every day, but generally meals should be balanced. And all the term balance really means, it just means eating a variety of foods. You want to get some vegetables, you want to get in some fruits, you want to get in some staples or high carbohydrate foods. You want to get in some high quality protein, and what that basically means is lean meats or fish or poultry or even meat alternatives. So the idea of balance just means eating a variety of foods. The typical Barbadian, and it'd be good to hear some what people have had today for lunch. The typical Barbadian, they tend to focus on lots of carbs, a large portion of meat, fish, or poultry. And maybe a sprinkle of veg.
A conscious serving of vegetables.
Yes.
Well, we don't have to go too far, Brian, to find out what persons had to eat for lunch today. Gregston.
Well, today, actually, it was very good for me. I had a whole set of vegetables, carrots, broccoli, cucumber, tomatoes. And what surprised me is that it was a larger part of the plate than I expected. Baked potatoes and baked chicken. If you ask me, of course, fried would be my choice, but that is what I was served, so I was very contented with it.
You see, and therefore, this is what you were served. You didn't serve yourself, did you?
No, not at all. Not at all. That is what I was served.
And were you contented after you ate?
Well, I had no choice, but yes, the answer to your question is yes, yes.
And I don't mean contented in terms of politeness. I mean in terms...
No, but I love vegetables, but I got a lot today, which is what you're saying. It should be, what, a third or half of the plate or something?
It's half of the plate.
Half of the plate, if possible.
Right, I had a lot of it today. I was like, wait a minute, just came back putting potatoes. What happened? But I was contented.
That's good to hear that you're making positive choices. I know that there are going to be some people who are probably irritated that I'm laughing, but honestly, these two in studio today especially are hilarious on their own. So with both of them in the studio now, I am at my wit's end. I'm going to try my hardest.
And I know people advise against having the fried foods. I'm quite sure Brian would say that bake is better. I'm quite sure.
No, bake is better. But I mean, if you want to have something fried on occasion, that's fine. But mm-hmm. The challenge comes down to when people are having these, especially fast foods, fried every single day, and people do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the problem comes in.
I prefer fried. To me, baked is a little bit too dry sometimes.
I guess it's how it's done and who does it. Because baked doesn't have to mean dry.
That's true, but. I prefer fried, which is not exactly what a good doctor would say, yes, go ahead and do. But Brian says you don't have to do it every single day, so we'll go with that. I'll ease my conscience with that.
Right. And every single day doesn't mean that you only have proper food on one day, you know, just leave out that one day. So on with the good dietitian, nutritionist. So we were saying that you should employ foods from all the different food groups and make that your diet. that make up the food that you eat. Yep, let's talk about the plate. Remind our listeners about how their plate should look in the ideal world.
Under perfect circumstances, you would want to have roughly half of your plate consisting of vegetables, and whether it be cooked vegetables or salad-type vegetables. Quarter would be some kind of staple or some kind of high-carbohydrate food. And then you would have a small portion of meat, chicken, fish, poultry, or a meat alternative. And that would generally give you an idea in terms of how your plate should look.
I was thinking about getting the balanced meal sorted out, and I wondered about the necessity of measuring food, weighing food. Do you think that that's necessary?
Well, for the average person, it would become too cumbersome to be weighing or measuring food. Because one, people always complain about the time to eat properly, and then to have, you know, to tell them you need to measure or you need to calculate exactly how much of a particular food group we need to consume, it could be a bit daunting for the average person. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that, you know, I would recommend it within an outpatient or community setting.
All right, let's make a scenario, or rather, how would you assess a person who's coming to you for the first time in order to be able to guide this particular person in making the best decisions for their diet? And we use diet meaning the food that they're supposed to eat. Let's use a traditional person who unfortunately has both hypertension and diabetes, and this person is more than likely middle-aged.
Right, so I think the big part, I think the first thing that I would do is that I would check for pre-existing health conditions.
Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned, diabetes, hypertension, possibly the cholesterol, maybe a touch high, maybe high, who knows. I would look visually. I would look at the person in terms of look to see in terms of where their body fat is distributed. Of course, you would do things like body mass index to determine their weight range. So there are lots of cues that I would look for, but the main things you would look for in terms of the pre-existing conditions, you will also look for their results. And this is prior to doing any questioning as it relates to how they're eating.
Let's talk a bit about the body mass index, because I've mentioned this on the show before. As a physician interacting with persons, I calculate the body mass index, and it's not a difficult calculation at all, and you can go online and there are calculators there that would do it for you. And the look of surprise on several persons' faces when I have to relay the bad news that they're not fluffy, that they are obese.
Yes.
Most people don't know that they are obese.
I think as human beings, as Bajans, I think we underestimate our weight.
Oh, and the other thing is that you usually get the same sound on the scale. It's usually like, or,
oh, yes.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yes.
Or my scale is wrong.
Oh yes, I mean, that's a very common one as well. But I think the chance is that we underestimate our weight and we overestimate our fitness and in terms of how good we eat. And I think people still, in terms of body mass index, I mean, it's not a perfect tool, but it's a good clinical tool because it's quick, it's not invasive. So it allows the practitioner to determine what your risk of developing, let's say, certain non-communicable conditions. So the body mass index is a really good tool, and people are still very surprised.
Very surprised. And the higher your body mass index, the higher your risk for developing the NCDs or non-communicable diseases, or for worsening of those diseases if you already have them. And if you have a body mass index using the calculators online and so on and so forth of greater than 30 or greater, you fall into the category of obese. And the thing is, there are weights that are so much that obese itself is divided into different classes.
Yeah.
So I remember there was somebody with a body mass index of 48.
Yeah, I've seen in the 50s.
Clearly, right. That cannot be good.
No, of course, that's where you're moving towards morbid obesity. And all that term means is that you're obese and it's really affecting your health.
And it's going to kill you eventually,
yeah,
if something is not done. So you assess these external things. You look at results that you might have had for the patient before, pre-existing conditions. Would you want to know what that person's level of fitness is as a nutritionist?
I mean, that would be good to know it, and I guess I would ask a few questions as it relates to that. Often in terms of fitness assessment, the polyclinic system is not wouldn't necessarily facilitate someone doing like a fitness test, for instance. So, but again, asking basic questions in terms of how active a person, you know, how many hours of physical activity they would do on a weekly basis or on a daily basis, that also gives you some really good cues.
So you've come up with this person's risk factors. Lifestyle. How much does lifestyle determine what you recommend as a community nutrition officer? Because you have to think about these things. What works for me might not ideally work for another individual.
In terms of, especially in terms of physical activity, because people assume that when we mention the term physical activity, and I use the word physical activity, use the words physical activity specifically and not exercise, because people assume that when you talk about physical activity, they mean that a person would need to run to a gym. However, in many cases, based on a person's lifestyle, how they work in terms of the hours, whether they have a family or not, you know, they are not able to get into a gym, or maybe sometimes people can't afford to get into a gym. So in terms of physical activity can be dancing, it can be walking, it can be swimming, it can be skipping. So these are things that people can do outside of the structured environment of a gym. And some people are intimidated by gyms as well too.
Yes, let me tell you what Brian is actually saying. So I'm sitting here next to him, and as Barbadians, as humans in general, as we speak, we gesticulate. Meaning that would be a word for Ken Gregston, gesticulate. We use our hands to try to relay the information that we're saying at the same time. So as Brian is gesticulating, I'm being knocked over by the biceps that he is walking around
and
with.
And he's wearing a Superman shirt too, my favorite comic hero.
He is wearing a Superman shirt. Okay, of all the shirts to come into the studio, wearing Superman. Nevertheless, so I understand the intimidation, right, by people who are in the gym.
It can be very daunting for some people. I know in some countries, in terms of some countries where I've lived and studied, there are gyms, you know, specifically for women, you know, or in some cases women would probably attend the gyms at specific times because, again, they try to make the environment as comfortable as possible for everyone using the facilities.
Let's talk about some general questions that people might ask. Someone who's diabetic had asked if, since being diagnosed with diabetes, if that means that they're no longer allowed to eat sweetbread, pone, or cake.
I've been doing this job for the last 14 odd years, and I probably get that almost every week. But the challenge is that people can enjoy treats, but the problem comes in is when people are enjoying these treats every day. So a person may say, I just have a piece of sweetbread or a piece of pone or a conkey. But when you tease out what they had or what they're having, I mean, you're appalled. People have a half of a sweetbread.
Yes.
You have like five conkeys. You know, even like mangoes.
Mango seeds. Okay. Mm-hmm. You see, we're not kidding. Mango seeds. I distinctly remember this lady's blood sugar was elevated. And I could not for the life of me figure out why. This is when I was younger. And the lady told me she sat down and ate half a bucket of mangoes. Mm-hmm. Well, I nearly passed out. I almost passed out. But I said, but ma'am, you have diabetes.
It's unreal, right?
It's unreal.
I can believe it because I know when I was a boy, we used to go and people mango trees. I ate 13. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. No, like not. So I can understand. Not that I agree, but I don't disbelieve her at all.
I was stunned, so... It's the amount that they're using.
Yes, definitely the volume. Mm-hmm. I'll give you another example. I think people are generally told rice, pasta, avoid those things as much as possible if you're diabetic especially, and you want to use things like sweet potatoes, yams, edibles, cassava, mm-hmm. breadfruit, the grump provision type foods are the unprocessed type staples. However, many people assume that they can eat as much sweet potato, as much cassava, yam, edibles as they want. But as I always tell people, regardless of whatever carbohydrate you consume, it will have an effect on your blood sugar. And if you overconsume the quote-unquote good ones, it will affect your blood sugar in a negative way.
Too much of a good thing is still a bad thing.
Of course.
And we want to talk about the alternative sweeteners as well, because we have a tradition of drinking hot beverages in the morning here in the Caribbean, Barbados included, and persons tended to put sugar in their tea. there were actually people who were putting the spoon between teaspoon and tablespoon, dessert spoon, I think that one is. They were putting 5 of those to sweeten their tea in the morning. So this person wants to know if they can use the alternatives like saccharin or sucralose.
I mean, they're an option if people can tolerate the taste. But generally, you don't want to use too many of those alternatives. Some of them may have a gastrointestinal effect as well, too. But they're an option for sure.
And the other problem that I came across with using the alternative sweeteners would be that persons think, okay, this has in alternative sweeteners, so they can use as much as they want from the particular food. So let's say there's a cake that's made with an alternative sweetener. So you think, no, it has no sugar. So as a diabetic, you can go ahead and have 4 slices of cake because it has no sugar. But what you're getting is 4 slices of butter.
Flour. So definitely it will impact person's blood. It will impact person's blood sugar. And I often tell people the key thing what you want to do, you want to retrain your taste buds as much as possible from high sugar and high salt. You know, but again, behavior change is very, very, very difficult, and you know, it takes some time. And again, sometimes people tend to overestimate what they can do within a short time frame.
We are talking to Brian Payne, nutritionist. We're going to take a word from our sponsors, and when we come back, we are going to discuss nutrition for special populations.
27 and a half now after 6 o'clock. This segment of the Better Health Radio Show is brought to you with the kind compliments of Hospital Back Adult Disposable Briefs, another trusted brand of AA Lachise. Please call them at 271-0180 and visit their store at Lanterns Mall.
I remember when I was a child and Mommy used to take me for walks. She would pick me flowers and do anything to make me happy. Well, these days, I take her for walks in her wheelchair, and it's my turn now to do everything to make her happy. That's why I only trust Hospital Pack Briefs to keep her dry, protected, and comfortable. Because it's my turn now to take care of her the way she took care of me, with only the best.
Hospital Pack Adult Disposable Briefs, another trusted brand from AA Lachise.
Welcome back to the Better Health Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Renee Boyce, in this evening with Gregston. And we are here with Community Nutrition Officer Brian Payne. Brian, we have a message here on WhatsApp. Someone wants to know the difference between a nutritionist and a dietitian.
Is that someone I know?
I doubt.
Dieticians tend to, for the most part, especially in terms of a Barbadian context, they tend to work specifically with any hospital setting, although I have colleagues who are dieticians, and they tend to work primarily in a clinical setting, whereas a person like myself, I work in an outpatient setting.
So that would just be the distinction between the two, hospital-based as opposed. Any other simple distinctions between the two?
I think some persons may be more geared to address specialized areas of nutrition like renal and other neonatal as well. So I think they would maybe specialize for different areas.
Okay, so maybe a community nutrition officer is like a general practitioner as opposed to a dietitian who is a specialist?
Well, we can go with that.
Okay, well, I hope that answer is satisfactory. We have another comment.
Before you go on, so dietitians, these are the ones who would, if you go to them, will plan out your specific eating habits, the type of food you should eat at this
both
time?
Can.
Both can. Okay.
We have someone else asking another question. This one, I think, is very cultural. It says, good evening, Dr. Boyce and guest. Can you tell me if there's a problem with me preparing my Sunday lunch, which is rice, in Pello style, as my daughter loves it that way? We use our vegetables, peas, and chicken in this meal, and this has now become the norm. And they also use other vegetables, such as tomato and lettuce, with that meal. So they're asking about meal preparation. Whether that's okay to do.
That sounds fine to me. My only thing would be, portion size.
So it all comes down to how much you eat.
Of course.
I'm actually trying to find an official definition for a dietitian as opposed to a nutritionist. So whilst I look for this, Brian, I want to ask you another question. If a person is on warfarin, are you able to advise that person? Because we had a call a couple programs back where the person was speaking about the fact that they were on warfarin and wondered about what to eat, what not to eat. So you can speak to that.
I think the main things that a person would need to be cognizant of would be they want to, of course, take their medication, attend, take their medication for sure, and attend all follow-ups. I think that's the first thing. Second thing would be, I think the main thing would be the dark green leafy type vegetables.
And kale and chard. And
yep. And I think the old school of thought was you would want to cut them out altogether.
Uh-huh.
But I think now we're progressing towards where we ask persons to maintain their intake. So let's say, for instance, a person in a clinic setting, and they said they're on warfarin, and they just got a big bag of spinach. I would say, of course, you could use small amounts, but you don't necessarily want to use very large amounts of it because it could potentially counteract the effects of the medication, the high vitamin K-like compounds.
Right, which are found in the dark green leafy vegetables. It seems to be the difference between nutritionists and dietitian has to do with qualifications and the field of study, as opposed to the abilities to advise persons. So the difference would be qualifications and what you studied, as opposed to abilities. Let's talk about a household where there are persons who have different nutritional needs. So the typical Barbadian household, and we have to be practical, where it's a case where you're not cooking six and seven different pots. So how do you go about trying to help somebody who has to prepare meals for different illnesses?
I always discourage, especially, I get this a lot with women, I always discourage people from preparing two or three pots to accommodate everyone in the household. Let's say a person who may be on a low salt or low sodium diet, I will tell them you want to reduce your intake of added salt or sodium as much as possible. And if the younger persons in the house who shouldn't be using high levels of sodium anyway, it would make sense for them to add a bit of salt to the food as opposed to the person actually preparing two meals. No, that doesn't make sense at all. But low sodium, low sugar, low fat, lots of fruits, lots of vegetables, I think that should be the standard approach for
the family, full stop. Because in my line of thinking, I am saying, if unfortunately I had, and I have to use myself before, I get accosted over the airwaves, if I had hypertension and doctor told me that I was supposed to reduce my salt levels and the other people in my household don't, well, they will have to get accustomed to the low salt.
Most definitely. Yeah. I totally agree. Like I use myself as an example again. I have a almost 2-year-old baby girl, and my partner as well, and I do the cooking primarily, and I may prepare a meal and she may say, oh, it needs a bit of salt. I say, sure, I put point at the salt shaker, and I think she would flavor her food accordingly. But the challenge of the typical Barbadian is that in many cases we think that salt is the only flavor.
Yes.
So that's a big problem.
You had mentioned already about readjusting our taste buds. Mm. And I think it starts from the time the little ones are eating.
Most definitely.
What we introduce them to eating is what they become accustomed to eating and is what they want to eat. I remember when I was a child, my dad was cooking. And this was years ago. Well, not years ago, a little while ago.
Years.
Yes, my dad was cooking, and I remember that the amount of salt that was in this food was like half a pot spoon of salt. And roll forward the years now, where I've become a little more knowledgeable and so on, I could never put that amount of salt in anything. It's so bad that when you reduce your own salt intake and you happen to go to another person's house or you have to eat out,
you quickly pick up
the amount of salt. Yes,
of course, yeah.
And that's a good sign. It shows that you're doing good things at home.
Most definitely. And the challenge with young children especially is that they develop their taste preference very early, from a year, 2 years. So if a child is exposed to high sodium, high sugar snacks and drinks from a very young age, they'll have that taste preference. So when they get to my age and your age, they will want these salty and these sweet things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always still, I would say appalled, but I would use surprised. I'm always so surprised to see, young children in any setting consuming lots of high sugar snacks and especially high sugar drinks.
You know? We were just about to talk about the Switch It Up campaign by the Heart and Stroke Foundation, the Healthy Caribbean Coalition, and so on. And I think an earlier program came on with Francine Alexander Charles, or Francine Charles, about the banning, getting sugar sweetened beverages banned in our schools.
That matter of interest, I think it was.
Right. So let's talk a bit about these sugar sweetened beverages. What is wrong with using, what can happen as a result of using these sugar sweetened beverages?
I think there's a place for the use of, and by sugar sweetened beverage, we don't only mean the fizzy drinks. We mean things like the juices.
The juice drinks. Mm-hmm.
And we also mean things like the flavored milks, for instance. So they're all very, very high in added sugars, and that's a problem. If in a Barbadian context, we just consume way too much of these things. The average fizzy drink, it contains roughly about 20 ounces. That is roughly about 2.5 servings. And that 2.5 servings can run you up to about 15 teaspoons of sugar.
Yes, that was one of the same things she had mentioned, and I had done some research myself that some of the fizzy drinks and so on have, like you said, 15 and 16 teaspoons of sugar. And when you actually put them in a little plastic bag and you look at the sugar, you're
shocking.
Appalled.
Yeah, shocking. Mm-hmm. And I think Barbados love sugar. And in terms of my travels, when I purchase a fizzy drink, I was overseas last year and I bought a Fanta. It tasted more like orange juice compared to the Fantas which are sold here. So it was that much of a distinction. We definitely have too much sugar, even compared to other countries. The sugar content is definitely very high.
And our sugar consumption, there are actual charts showing that our sugar consumption as a nation is actually times higher than worldwide, the worldwide average, I believe.
Yeah, of course.
We have a call. Let's take this call. Good evening and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Yes, good evening to all.
Good evening.
I have three questions. I want to know, should you eat cheese every day? Is cheese linked to breast cancer? And how often should you eat ice cream?
All right, Brian, take it away. Cheese every day.
I'll go with you. Challenge with cheese, again, cheese is a... Again, it's a good source of protein, good source of vitamins and minerals, etc. The hard cheeses, and I suspect you probably mean something like a cheddar cheese, they tend to be quite high in sodium. So you wouldn't necessarily want to eat too much cheese every day. Small portions, if possible, but the typical Barbadian...
cement block of cheese.
Yeah, which is in itself problematic. But your second question was related to...
cheese and breast cancer?
I haven't read anything which relates to dairy being linked.
Right. I think what she's referring to would have been a video that came across our social media platforms where a doctor, I'm not sure what type of doctor, was linking breast cancer to cheese consumption. But I have not been able to verify if this was authentic, because there are several things that come across the social media platforms which need to be verified.
Yeah, of course. Right. So you need to take these things with a grain of salt. There are thousands of types of cheeses. But the most important thing is that something like cancer or breast cancer, it's such a complex condition to link one specific dietary component is very difficult, because you got to look at things like a person's family history, which is very, very predictive in terms of whether a person has a condition like cancer or not. Mm-hmm. So to link one thing specifically, like cheese, is very hard for me to make that link. But again, I would probably need to, I would probably love to see what you read that caused you to ask the question.
What was your number? You had a third question? What was it? Third question?
Ice cream.
My last question is about ice cream. I love ice cream.
Love is a strong word. people tend to say they love a particular food.
She's happy to tell you that too.
Indeed. I think she's eating some now. The challenge with ice cream is that, again, it's a dairy, but it contains quite a bit of sugar. So you don't necessarily want to over consume on some of the ice cream.
Okay.
So that's the issue. Lots of sugar. Lots of fat too, but sugar is the more important thing.
So you should use it twice a week, or
Well, let me just jump to Brian's defense here. Even though he does not need me to defend him, you would have to take that up with your doctor and your community nutrition officer who understands your particular needs. We are unable to say that it's safe for you to eat ice cream twice a week.
I think if I can jump in here, dog. Call her. Yes. Call her. You just want me to go ahead to eat.
Yes, that's what it is.
Do it like drinking. Enjoy it responsibly. How about that? So you don't want to eat it every single day. I'm quite sure the professional chef will tell you that.
And that makes sense.
All right.
You have taste very much.
You're welcome.
And thank you for your question as well. Just briefly, there's a study here on milk and yogurt intake. On the one hand, they're saying that milk could potentially... So when you hear these words, there is no definite link. And like Brian was saying just now, that the breast cancer itself is very, very complex. There are so many different things that determine whether a woman or man develops breast cancer. So they're saying that some of the other contents in milk, such as calcium and vitamin D, have been thought to reduce the risk of breast cancer.
But
so
one is saying it's good. And
no, within the same milk, you have components which could potentially lead to breast cancer. In milk itself, you have things which could prevent breast cancer, things like calcium and vitamin D.
You know, to the average person, sometimes the information coming out can be very misleading, can be confusing, because when you're growing up, what I tell you about milk, drink milk because it's healthy food,
for your
blah,
bones.
Blah, blah, blah.
You get old and you hear you shouldn't drink milk, it's bad
something
for you.
Different.
Eat eggs, they're good for you. Don't eat
eggs,
they're
going.
Bad for you.
Eggs, and I eat a lot of eggs, so wait a minute, that's going to cause problems. Then you tell me that I should be eating eggs. Then next you tell me that I shouldn't be eating something. So
I think one of the reasons, one of the things that I want to caution people about is reading without a fund of knowledge. Mm-hmm. So you go to Dr. Google and you type in something and information comes up. And usually people read the first thing that comes up, which is not necessarily the safest or the most correct. Mm-hmm. And then they run with this information.
I'll give you one last example. Now, I eat tomatoes. Why? Because even Ken Husbands would tell you. He engages in tomato paste because... There are studies say that tomatoes are good for men because of the prostate.
Lycopene.
That's what he says. And I eat a lot of tomatoes. I only heard not too long ago that tomatoes are also, quote-unquote, not good for you if you are arthritic because it aids in your arthritis and causing pain and problems. So I was like, wait a minute, what do they want us now to eat? So I can understand the confusion sometimes when people say that one minute you tell us eat this and next minute you tell us that same thing you told me to eat 2 years ago is now not so good for you.
The best thing to do is ask your doctor or your community nutrition officer.
What happens when it's coming from a doctor?
Well, you got a little problem there.
Go ahead, Doc.
Yes. So one of the biggest things, we're talking about those things that people are asking now. And one of the things that people say is that it is so expensive to eat properly. Let's hear your thinking on this.
Well, what I would say is Barbados is probably one of the more expensive places to live in the world.
That previous statement was
true.
Not was not a statement
just true.
From the Starcom
just
network,
true.
But it was the opinion of the person who uttered.
I second your opinion, Mr. Brian.
It was right. Yeah. So
I agree too.
A lot of it is really going to come down to people need to plan. For instance, let's say we're told to eat more fruits and vegetables. Let's say a person buys a container of grapes. The average person or a person may eat the entire thing thinking that, okay, this is like a serving of fruit, not understanding or realizing that, you know, that could be maybe 3 or 4 servings. So that in itself is important. But the best way to save or to eat healthy is you need to plan your meals. So it can be a case where you wake up one morning and say, I feel like eating, you know, so-and-so, and then you do it. You need to plan meals and budget as well, too. I think that's important.
All right, let's take this call and we'll come back to shopping wisely. Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening. How are you doing, ma'am?
We're doing well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm good. My name is Carl Padmore.
Oh, hello. Hello, Mr. Padmore.
Yes, this is the Better Health Show, Better Health Truly Nation.
This is through VOB, Starcom Network of Stations, so...
Yeah, which is Nation, everything included?
Correct.
Right, okay, fine, good, right. I just wanted to say, I've been able to debunk that myth that says eating healthy is expensive. I'll tell you why. If you buy the average snack box, that costs about $16 now. If you take that same $16 and you buy your fruits and your proteins, which can come from nuts, and your cereal, you can get 2 servings out of the $16 if you understand portion sizes. And you will get more nutrients with your $16 spent on your fruits and proteins than on the snack bar. I think what happens is that we eat too much. So instead of eating the breast and the leg, we can just eat the breast. But we just eat a lot. And instead of having the fistful of rice, we want 4 spoonfuls of rice. So the food, the Sunday food, should be able to serve it twice, but we eat that Sunday food one time. Mm-hmm. So Barbadians are in the habit of consuming too much. So in shopping wisely, that whole chicken rice can, sometimes can serve 2 or 3 times, but we eat that whole chicken one time on the Sunday. So I think that we need to stop saying that eating healthy is expensive. For instance, if you go to the market, and you get your vegetables, they are cheaper. You have to go in town, but some people don't have to go in town and shop. And you can get bargains down there at the market. If you use eggs, there are some people selling eggs, a crate of eggs for $10. And those eggs, sometimes can serve you 2 weeks, but we would want to eat 3 eggs one time in the morning, and then every morning eat 3 eggs, and then want to know what the cholesterol is high, because we are taking in too much food. I think patients as well need to start taking our food sometimes during liquid. There's nothing wrong with blending your greens, but we can't see a shake as a meal. Somebody will go to a shop and get a shake, but still want to go and eat a meal instead of understanding that the shake in itself is a meal. You got me?
Yes, that's quite true.
Right, okay, I just wanted to add that.
Thank you so much for your input. And I really do agree with the fact that we as Barbadians, culturally, we do eat a lot. And he really did make some valuable points, going to the market to get your vegetables. And another thing you can do is purchase.
Thank you, Carl.
Oh, I thought you had gone. Sorry about that, Carl. Another thing you can do is purchase with a family member, buy in bulk, and divide out amongst the different persons in your family or with your friends and so on. So you look for ways to reduce food costs. And another thing that Professor Henry Fraser has always said, eat what's in season because it's cheap. So if it means that you have to find 20 different ways to eat cucumbers when they're in season, you'll find 20 different ways to eat cucumbers because you're trying to save money.
Yeah, of course. And I often tell people as well, I mean, if their particular vegetables, which are, I guess it would be fresh, a glut, if there are a lot of them, you could buy them and you could freeze them, you know, and you could use them that way. You know, I think that's a good strategy as well. I think people tend to overlook the usefulness of things like peas and beans in terms of preparing meals. I think the average Barbadian, they would want some kind of meat, fish, or poultry with their food every single time. And people tend to neglect, you know, things like peas and beans and nuts.
And they are a very good source of protein. I think some people are just fed up with the gas that you get with eating peas and beans. That's a side effect that some people don't like. It is real. It is real. One of the byproducts of eating beans and the
especially
other cruciferous
beans.
Cruciferous
especially
vegetables
beans,
is gas. It's flatus. It happens, but they're good for you. We're going to take another break here, and we will be back to discuss some more things in nutrition with Mr. Brian Payne, Community Nutrition Officer.
All right, time is slowly going by, or should I say quickly going by, slowly coming to an end. The Bad Health Radio Show coming to you today with the kind compliments of A.A. LaKeith. This segment is brought to you with the kind compliments of Hospital Pack Adult Disposable Briefs, another trusted brand of A.A. LaKeith. Call A.A. LaKeith at 271-0180. That's 271-0180. And visit their store at Lanterns Mall.
I remember when I was a child and Mommy used to take me for walks. She would pick me flowers and do anything to make me happy. Well, these days, I take her for walks in her wheelchair, and it's my turn now to do everything to make her happy. That's why I only trust Hospital Pack Briefs to keep her dry, protected, and comfortable. Because it's my turn now to take care of her the way she took care of me, with only the best.
Hospital Pack Adult Disposable Briefs, another trusted brand from A.A. LaKeith.
Welcome back to this, the final segment of the Better Health Radio Show. It's now 10 minutes to 6 in Barbados and across the Eastern Caribbean. Oh, oops, 10 minutes to 7. You see, I'm having so much fun in here. That's because I've been in the studio for a while.
You're always welcome, my dear.
Oh, yes, thank you. That was no fault of mine, the reason I was in here so early. But
come
anyway,
back at 4 next week.
No. We're talking to Brian Payne, Community Nutrition Officer, Superman Extraordinaire.
Some days.
Yes, you know, one of these days we're going to get the live feed so that persons can see that I'm not exaggerating about these biceps. I would like to say that Brian's biceps are almost as big as my thigh. I am not.
But you realize my strategy.
What is that?
I'm wearing a tight shirt to make sure that I look half as good as a gym and it still ain't working.
So, we want to talk about meal planning. See, I was always the one who would end up laughing all the time when the others cracked jokes. I never used to get into trouble, but anyway, back to our regularly scheduled programming. Let's talk about meal planning. That's important. Really and truly, you see, the problem is that sometimes people don't know how to do these things. Some simple steps for meal planning.
Simple steps would be to have an idea in terms of what are the appropriate portion sizes for a person. For instance, a thigh would be a sensible portion size, or half a chicken breast would be a sensible portion size. In terms of, so roughly about 4 to 6 ounces would be a portion size. A typical person would probably comes from maybe twice as much as that. So if, let's say like a breast should serve twice and you're using it once, automatically your food cost would tend to be a little higher.
Which is the same thing that Mr. Padmore was just saying.
You know, so in terms of planning meals, it always makes sense. Well, no, don't let me say that, but it's a good practice to cook, to prepare your meals at home. Because when you prepare your meals at home, definitely the cost per meal is going to be significantly cheaper. Trying to incorporate things like vegetables and fruits which are in season, again, that makes sense as well too, because again, these things tend to be more affordable. I think people tend to assume that because fruit or vegetable is imported, it may be a healthier choice or a better choice. But of course, that is not true, because local fruits and vegetables are just as nutritious. You know, so those things are important as well.
All right, we'll come back to meal planning. Let's take this call. Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening.
Good evening. Just remember to turn your radio down in the background.
There's a problem for you to turn off my radio.
Oh, if you can move away then from the radio, that might help.
Hold on a minute.
So whilst he's adjusting his position, one of the things that we can do, you had mentioned it earlier, is that you can actually plan your meal. So on Monday for breakfast, I'm going to have biscuits and tuna. For lunch, I'm going to have leftovers from Sunday in the right proportions. And on Tuesday, I'm going to have cereal, oats, and fruit for breakfast. So you plan and you buy accordingly.
Yeah.
You're with us, sir?
Yeah, hold on a minute.
Oh, okay. He's not with us as yet.
And when you say biscuits and tuna, you don't necessarily, a half a can of tuna would be considered a serving size, and you're not going to have the whole pack of biscuits.
It's supposed to be 5, I think. It's written on the...
If possible, yes.
Yes. Right.
A typical person will have the whole...
What's
can
that, Greston?
You're looking to start.
Hello?
Hello?
Go ahead, sir.
Hello.
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead, please.
I'm from the old school. I come along in the days when you used to eat food, when you see the gravy swimming all around the side of the plate, and gravy in the center of the food. And you see it very, very good. Nowadays, you go to a shop and you call for food, you don't even get gravy. Or I say gravy is this and gravy is that. I want to know, of all the problems you're telling me about, how comes that Bajans living longer than anybody else?
Well, if you look at it, sir...
How come that Bajans, people living to 100, nearly every week you hear somebody's 100, a lot of people in the 90s and the 80s...
Yeah, but only select few.
And they eat...
And let's talk about vegetables. I don't know about the vegetables, the boy. I used to eat food, and most likely two slices of lettuce. And if you're lucky, you'll get two pieces of cucumber. And if pear season, you get a small little piece of pear. But I can't remember this lot of vegetables and salad and all kinds of things. It's a lot of dumplings and yam and potato and cassava. You know, you should eat a lot of that. But there's a lot of vegetables and broccoli. Yeah, I didn't never know about broccoli as a boy neither.
All right, may I comment, sir? One of the things that has happened is that with advancing years, we have now become a little more affluent. There's a little more money to spend. So persons can now afford things like broccoli and carrots and so on and so forth. So now they can become staples in our food. You mentioned persons living to the age of 100 and so on. But what about those persons, sir, who are dropping down at 55 and 54 in droves?
But what I'm saying is that for people that live to 90, is the people that eat everything they could get, because life isn't that easy.
Right,
you
but
get food, you eat.
But caller, there's another component you must consider, huh? I'm going to let the professionals deal with it in a second or two. But you must understand, and you made reference to it yourself, that you're of the aged segment of the population. Those guys worked really hard.
So they used to walk from St. Lucie to town.
Exactly. So the swimming of the food in the gravy and all the different things and lack of vegetables and that sort of stuff, you guys worked that off physically most of the time during your course of your life. Today, we are far too sedentary to tolerate that sort of behavior. And for us to live to 100 with that sort of behavior that you would have exhibited back then when you were growing up.
I used to like pop work.
This gentleman getting me hungry, you know.
Pork, man. Corn, pork.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that. And eat it. Cause and eat the skin. You can throw away the skin. Grandma says, but you don't know what's good for you.
Mm-hmm. But we can't afford to do those things now, sir. We're not going to make it past 40.
Not the most of the population.
We put ourselves in all.
Exactly.
Situation.
By our lifestyle.
We create problems for ourselves.
And we're trying to uncreate them now. We've recognized that we've done wrong.
No, that's not true. It's all about people making money now.
Oh, dear.
Well, that part is true, too.
People come in with all kinds mm-hmm. of techniques.
I wouldn't argue with that point.
And all kinds of things. And take for the herbalist. The people the herb. And he did the Black Plague and cholera. Meningitis and these penicillins and these kind of things. But we get rid of them diseases, mumps, measles. We didn't have all this kind of technology. And we get rid of it. But now with all the technology they got, you got more diseases now coming up now than ever.
Well, sir, we really do agree with much of what you are saying,
mm-hmm.
and we wish you continued health in your golden years. And thank you for calling.
Thank you.
All right, sir. You have a wonderful evening. Sorry we got to run away from you because time is getting very small, and there's another call on the line. The doctor wants to get out of here, but we're going to make her work a little bit overtime today. Let's see if we can engage this caller.
Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening, my dear, to you and your guests. I was going to give him the answer for that. These days they have bushy cutting canes. Those days men used to dig.
Yeah, used to work hard. Mm-hmm.
Walk from Silver Hill to St. George, which is Silver Hill and Christ Church. Walk to St. George for the morning and walk back for the evening. Nobody walks nowhere now. So that is part of the problem.
Especially in this sun.
Yes. No, the sun used to be hotter then.
But I'm telling you, no, we ain't doing it in this sun.
You ain't doing it in this sun?
Nope.
That's what we need to do. Do it and sweat it out.
Yeah, but
have a great night,
unfortunately,
huh?
We don't do it.
We don't. Bus, car. So everything's just back on and by God. Get it?
All right. All right. Thank you for your call and have a good evening. Doc, don't run away yet. We got one more. I promise this is the last one. I won't force another one on you. Good evening, Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening.
Good afternoon.
Hi, good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Sure, very good. The lady that called about the ice cream.
Yes.
If you go in a supermarket, like a Massey, there's an ice cream there made. Wait.
Try not to call brands.
Okay, there's an ice cream that was made by English people. A great rose. And it has less a gram of sugar. It don't have much taste. I eat ice cream 30 times in a year. I'm over 81. But I have to stand on the beach up and down.
Whoa.
Okay. See that last part that you said? You walk up and down the beach, right?
Yeah, but at my age, you see me running, you would take out 25. But I will tell you for advice and for you and your people, the English ice cream, you read the chart. It has less grams of sugar.
All right.
Okay.
I check all my levels.
Well, actually, no, you didn't, sir, but thanks.
Okay, thank you very much.
Well, from that, you can tell the others to check their labels as well so that they'll see which ice cream is with less sugar and try to use that one when trying to enjoy a mouthful of ice cream. Doc, I'm sorry for pressing you into some overtime action, but that's okay. The people love to hear you, so you can wrap up with your guest, please, because I know you wanted to do that earlier and I stopped you.
So, Brian, what I want you to do is just give us a little heads up about what's going to be happening in May.
In May, the National Nutrition Center, we celebrate National Nutrition Month, and it'll be a month of activities during the month of May.
That's it. Oh, you see, he doesn't want to spill the beans. So you have to listen out during the month of May to what's going to be happening with the National Nutritional Center. National Nutrition Center. Yes.
So there'll be a series of activities throughout the course of the month.
Well, we are going to be listening out. We'll have you back on to discuss what's going on. You obviously don't want to let the cat out of the bag, so I leave you there with that.
But before you go, Brian,
sure.
And this is quite off topic, silly question, but I just got to ask you, when you write your name, people ever ask you if you're a Bumba?
Every day.
See, there you go. Every so it wasn't that bad of a question after all. Doc, go ahead.
That never crossed my mind. Doc. Never.
From the time you heard his name, I was like, wait, Bumba?
And I've known Brian for a couple of years now. That never crossed my mind.
Oh my goodness.
Let's take this opportunity, if he's listening, to say hello to Brian Bumba Payne. He works at the National Council for Substance Abuse. He's associated with them, I think. Yeah, so good evening, Mr. Payne. Or if anybody who's listening knows Mr. Payne, tell him that we gave him a shout out. Mm-hmm. On the Better Health Radio Show. So that's what you've been listening to, ladies and gentlemen, the Better Health Radio Show. Today we discussed nutrition with Mr. Brian Payne, Community Nutrition Officer. We're going to have him back in May to discuss Nutrition Month, so listen out for that. We have another exciting show planned next week, which is going to be...
So you have I'm looking at you for the answer. Can you remember?
No.
Okay, then.
No, and the show is planned all the way down to... somewhere down late in the year, and I don't remember. I always make it a habit to try to remember to see what's going to be coming up next, and I always forget.
Don't worry, we'll write it down next time.
I'm going to send it to you during the week. I think that's what I'll do.
All right.
So that's me. That's my time. I am Dr. Renee Boyce. I am your host. I hope you had a good time. We had a good time here in the studio.
Certainly.
Yes. And thanks, Carl Alf Padmore, for coming in, and thanks again to you, Brian. For coming in and chatting with us.
It was a pleasure being here.
All right, bye.
All right, thank you, Doc. Thank you, Brian. And like the good doctor said, next week, Sunday, 6 again for another edition of the Bed Health Radio Show. And on this occasion, the Bed Health Radio Show was brought to you with a kind compliment of Hospital Pack Adult Disposable Briefs, another trusted brand of A.A. Lachise. Please call A.A. Lachise at 271-0180 and visit their store at Lanterns Mall.
A voice of a nation with something to say, reaching out to thousands of people all over the world every day. So take time and let us know what's on your mind. You'll find a voice on VOV.